Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Oh, yeah. Started to burn too many things we found. This is Harvey Sluggo Washerman here for another hour in the Green Power and Wellness Solartopia Show. We are rolling along here. We got some great guests, and we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. My phone's ringing, of course. I got Joel Siegel, the great Joel Siegel. Are you on with us, Joel?
I am, Sluggo. Honored to be here with my brother James Fukuda, one of the leading advocates in this country on solar clean energy and clean housing and ending homelessness with me. New York
great,
City.
Great, great. And Mark Ash, are you with us? Mark Ash has not called in yet. Mark Ash hasn't called in. He's a publisher of reader-supported news. So good. Well, we got a straight shot here with you two guys. James Fukuda, great to meet you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure, absolutely. So listen, you two guys, first I want to say that later in the show we're going to talk about Diablo Canyon and nuclear power. We are really up against it here. We have a narrowing window deal with shutting this monster down, and we'll talk about that in the second half of the show. With you two guys, we want to talk about the Green New Deal and this new movement on poverty that I have not yet heard about. So let's hear from you guys. What's up?
So what we're trying to do is end poverty by saying that it's a human right. It's a human right to have housing. It's a human right to eat. It's a human right to have health care. And we're all greater if we're all advancing. I house a large number of homeless people and homeless families. I have an LGBTQ trans population in some of my housing. And they are cut off from the rest of the nation and the rest of our economy. And it's not right. This is a human right. They have the right to progress along with everyone else. And it is not happening now.
And Susie Shannon, who is Progressive Democrats of America, Los Angeles, she, as the Nation magazine, just did a great article about how the DNC was recalcitrant in getting a room at their national committee conference. And she started this poverty council, first of its kind. And we are packing the people with members of Congress, state legislators, like Nina Turner, homeless advocates. And for the first time, we're going to put poverty front and center in the Democratic Party and the 2020 elections, just like the Great Society and the New Deal. And it starts at 5:30 tomorrow night to 7:30 at the Marriott Hotel Marquis. And we ain't playing around. We're dead serious. We're going to have a legislative agenda. We're going to have a bill to end homelessness, bills to end hunger. We're going to grow this caucus so that if you run for president or Congress, you better be for ending poverty or you ain't going to get elected. James?
And we're going to get them registered, and we're going to get them to the polls.
Yeah, that's the key. I'm sorry about the noise. We're right in front of the Capitol. Must be someone who's about to arrest Donald Trump for various transgressions. Sorry about that. It's so exciting, Harvey, because, the Democratic Party for years has talked about the middle class, but the middle class, as you know, has been shrinking to the point where Majority of Americans are now working poor. And then you got those in poverty who, you know, about 7 million people don't have housing. Millions don't have child care. Millions don't have a safety net. When they fall from their job, millions of seniors are crushed into poverty, like my brother and my mom, who can barely live off their Social Security. Time for a people's movement. Time for the Democratic Party to prioritize ending poverty.
All right. So what is your game plan here? How are you going to go? We know how much our president cares about. I'm going to back that up. We want to know how much the criminal in the White House cares about poverty. What are you going to do about it?
Well, I'll just give you a little bit and then I'll let James answer that question too. What we're doing is, instead of having 2,000 NGOs and elected officials all, you know, working on poverty and failing, we're going to unify under one, you know, anti-poverty united front, and then have a definitive legislative agenda where we can start getting some bills passed in the House where we have a majority, like a bill. Actually, I've drafted a bill that would literally end homelessness and, you know, create a jobs program, but end homelessness by making sure there's billions of dollars for cities and towns to build housing. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. There's 34,000 people who don't have housing. We'd like to build it. We don't have any money. Well, we're going to get that money from Congress. You can't get that unless, A, the House stays Democratic and the Senate is flipped. And the White House has a Democrat in it, so that's strategy number one, electoral. We're going to have a Democratic majority. Number two, we have to consolidate all these groups so we can have a grand strategy, legislative agenda, congressional briefings. We're going to meet twice a year and organize mayors, state legislators, faith leaders, you know, people like yourself, the environmental movement. And we're going to pass historic bills just like the Great Society, James.
We're going to demonstrate that the government will actually save money by bringing people into a sustainable model. We will save
money. So tell us about that. Tell me about that calculation. That's an interesting calculation. We've been saying the same thing.
In the city of New York, for instance, it costs more than $70,000 a year to house one homeless person.
Oh my God.
Is that right?
$70,000 a year?
That is the published figure. That's not my number. That's the New York Times.
It costs $167,000 to put someone in Rikers Island prison when you could get person housed and supportive services. But I think, you know, the other thing we want to do is in the Democratic platform, Sluggo, is we're going to put, you know, housing as a human right and make sure that it's not in the Democratic platform. No presidential candidate is running on affordable housing for all or child care for all or Social Security benefit. Like, I'm writing a bill where you get $3,500 or $3,000 as soon as you retire or you're disabled, but we want to influence the Democratic platform, influence every Democratic presidential candidate to make sure that running on an anti-poverty agenda is front and center, and that none of them are doing that, but we're going to have a nationwide movement. We're going to make sure that they do.
Okay, so where is the money going to come from in the federal budget? Are we going to take it out, dare I say, at the military, the empire? Are we going to cut back on the empire? How much is this going to cost?
Well, I mean, I think the first step is we're going to roll back this stupid tax cut that our president passed earlier this year.
No. Wait. James, I love you dearly. We do not refer to this clown as our president.
The Occupy.
Wait. I can't use language like that either because some of it's fine on PRM, but some of the stations that pick this up can't use four-letter words. So
how about the clown? But let me tell you how we're going to pay for it. If we do a small tax stock and bond transaction, right, on let's say it's over $100 between the buyer and seller, and it's a 50-cent tax on that transaction. There's $350 billion, and there's the end of the housing problem. We're going to have to dramatically cut the military. There are generals who've already come up with an alternative budget. There's weapon systems that have to be cut. There's forces that have to, you know, and bases all around the world. But that's, you know, I can't speak for the DNC, and I can't speak for everybody tomorrow night. I will tell you that that's what I'm going to argue. I've been working on this. I worked for Seymour Melman for a long time on, you know, converting to a civilian economy, and I worked for George McGovern. But you absolutely have to dramatically reduce military spending. It's over $780 billion. That's the Pentagon. We don't know Homeland Security and CIA. I would say it's certainly $1.5 trillion, maybe $2 trillion. And then you're going to have to roll back the Bush tax cuts, the person who occupies the White House tax cuts, and the Reagan tax cuts. And once you do that, there's your money for housing and a job program and child care, because you can't be the richest country in the world and the poorest country in the world at the same time. We have a $16 trillion gross domestic product. We are the leading exporter of oil. But when 0.1% own more wealth than 90% of everyone else, then that's the other issue that progressives are going to have to start talking about, and that's distribute the wealth from the super wealthy, who won't miss that money, okay? And I'm not saying they're evil, but they're going to have to pay their fair share of taxes, because that's part of being patriot in this country. It's not just serving a war. James?
I agree with you totally.
Cool.
Don't forget Medicare for All.
And Medicare for All. If we go to an expanded and improved Medicare for All, the bill that I co-authored with John Conyers and 40 members of Congress, I just got out of a meeting with Representative Jayapal, we're reintroducing the bill. The savings of that will be in the billions, because we're going to be spending over $22 trillion over the next 10 to 15 years on Medicare and Medicaid. You cannot continue a for-profit corporate system, stockholder-driven. It's going to bankrupt our nation. When the Republicans and the right wing say, oh, the Medicare for All is going to bankrupt our nation, they don't know what they're talking about. It'll keep the cost flat. The government will know each year how much we're going to spend. And it'll have to be a nonprofit delivery system. And it's not that complicated, man, but you can't transition to a clean energy economy and poverty and spend trillions on healthcare so a few people who run hospitals and drug companies get rich. So single payer is got to be part of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so let's figure this out now. Are you putting this in? Well, first of all, how do people get a hold of you guys before we lose track?
I'm going to give you my cell number. You want to call me about joining the new Poverty Council? You can call me directly at 571-344-1518. That's 571-344-1518. Or Joel, J-O-E-L, .R.Siegel, S-E-G-A-L, @gmail.com. James?
You can always email me at JK, F as in Frank, U as in umbrella, K as in King, U as in umbrella, D as in David, A as in Apple, @gmail.com.
Housing is a human right, Harvey.
What's that?
Housing is a human right. A job is a human right. Child care is a human right. Health care is a human right. It's time for a citizens' revolution. It's what Bernie Sanders talked about. You cannot do that. If you want to change policy, you got to change the policymakers. So in 2020, everybody is going to have to start signing up voters, going door to door. We cannot let Trump have another 4 years, and we can't say it can't happen, because I lived through 8 years of Bush. We actually worked in Congress during that period, fought Reagan for 8 years, but you know, for a lot of activists, we're always criticizing the Democrats. Well, you know, I don't criticize Barbara Lee. I don't criticize Maxine Waters. I think they're fantastic. But Trump's got to go, and we need progressive Democrats to run for office to attract communities of colors and the base, right, young people. And, you know, this is the only way we're going to be able to get an anti-poverty agenda, a clean energy agenda, a no-nuke agenda done. Well, it's one of the ways.
Well, I'm all for you with that. So let's talk now Are you putting this under the category of the Green New Deal? I mean, is this part of the whole shtick here? I know, Joel, you and I co-authored a piece for Reader Supported News about the Green New Deal and offered 46 different points of light here, as George H.W. Bush might have said. And I got many, many more suggestions, you know, after that to add to it. So are you seeing this campaign on homelessness and poverty as part of the Green New Deal?
There are a lot of people who will be attending the DNC Inaugural Poverty Council who are strong, like myself, advocates of the Green New Deal. I can't speak for the Poverty Council because we'll be meeting for the first time tomorrow. I can tell you that we can literally create 7 million clean, renewable energy jobs if we do this. I don't, you know, between building 7 million units of affordable housing to end homelessness, solar-powered, energy-efficient, solarizing cities and towns and mass transit and rebuilding our infrastructure and housing so it's energy-efficient. If you want to eliminate poverty, that is one of the most efficacious ways to do it, is to build on the Green New Deal and link it to ending poverty. So I and several others will be, you know, advocating for that. We just went to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's office. She's a rock star, man. She's like Beyonce or something. There were cameras out her door, and she's like, man, she's like the Beatles, and she's a rock star up here, and she's pushing that Green New Deal. And but if we want to get the Green New Deal passed, it has to be an intersectional bill, I think it is. But you need an anti-poverty movement. That's got to be in solidarity with the 100% clean energy, renewable energy movement. It's got to be intersectional. The days of single-issue organizing are dead. We have to all work together, progressives under one united front on the outside, and then get the progressives on the inside to pass our bills. That's what Martin Luther King taught us when he passed the 64 and 60 Civil Rights Act. That's what the anti-Vietnam War movement taught us, and that's what you taught us when you helped, I think, deleted $80 billion to build, so they wouldn't build nukes. But you got to build
actually,
a coalition.
You're right about that. If, you know, how quickly we forget. That was in 2007, just before Nancy Pelosi became speaker, and we eliminated $50 billion that Bush wanted to put into new nukes, and we were able to stop that. So
also here,
I'm glad you're reminding me.
Harvey, I wanted to also tell you, we're introducing a bill that will solarize Puerto Rico and bring clean energy to Puerto Rico. Representative Ted Lieu will be introducing that bill either this week or next week. It can literally create 100% clean renewable energy for Puerto Rico. But also, we're getting ready to have a meeting with a member of Congress. I've drafted a bill with many other people in Puerto Rico. I went to Puerto Rico, as you know, to rebuild Puerto Rico. 60,000 people don't have any housing. They get $90 a month in welfare, which is disgusting. And when we talk about poverty, let's not forget about the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, because a lot of times we don't view them as part of the United States. They're territories. They're citizens. So that's very important too, that we don't forget Puerto Rico like the guy in the White House did, the mumza. That's a Yiddish word for crazy.
Which mumza? Well, this one right now we refer to as the Ghana. But, and that's just for the start. But, the next one, I don't know which one you're referring to as the mums are there, but whatever you say is fine. So
it starts with T and ends with P. That's what it is, a mumser. The Yiddish word, you're crazy.
By the way, you know, I want to talk to you. You guys are in D.C., a little politics here. It seems
sure,
to me, and
please,
Nobody's mentioning this, the real reason that Trump is going to shut down the government again is not about the wall. It's about the investigations and the impeachment. This is a distraction away from his criminal proceedings here. It's not about the wall at all. I don't know why nobody's picked up on that. This is just to keep people all tied up so that the hearings can't happen on his criminal behavior. Don't you think?
Well, that's because there are not very many Professor Javi Wassermans that have Solartopia shows. And you know, you've been a student and a professor of politics for decades now. But, no, you're right. He's also using it as a cudgel to threaten Democrats by saying, if you investigate me, I'm not going to cut a deal with you, and I'll just close down the government. But yeah, I really do believe that the war in Iraq, similarly, when Bush invaded Iraq, that's when Enron was being investigated, and it's that classic situation where you do anything you can to make sure that the press coverage, right, isn't on you, but it's on some issue that has nothing to do with the real problem. And yes, it's an obfuscation. It's a way to get people's attention off of what Bush has done. I mean, they just found out that during the campaign that Bush was working on building a Trump Tower in Moscow. And that, to me, is an impeachable, right, offense. If you're not supposed to conduct business, man, when you're running for office. And although it hadn't been proven, there's just, I mean, almost every one of those top-level people have been indicted for collusion with Russia. And, you know, are they really saying that Donald Trump didn't know any of this? You know, come on. I think he did. And, Mueller is going after him and the Democrats are going after him and they're cutting away at his credibility. A lot of Democrats have voted for Trump, but they're not going to vote for Trump in 2020 because of these, investigations. And in terms of the wall, let everyone know, I'm now the new National Environmental Director for LULAC, the largest Latino civil rights organization in the world. But I told them, let's draft a bill to close down these detention facilities with the children, close them down, just like shut down the nukes, close down these detention facilities that have killed two children. By the way, since 2016, 22 people have died in detention. But I don't know why we're allowing, especially progressives and members of Congress, why are we allowing children to be detained in these refrigerators, right, which is all illegal, separated from their families? They'll be traumatized for the rest of their life. And what is the difference between that and the internment of the Japanese and the concentration camps of Jewish people in Auschwitz? You know, I just don't understand, man. You know, where's the legislation? Where's the outcry? All thousands of children in detention. For what? There wasn't a problem before, you know, the guy in the White House invented it. It's disgusting, man. So I'm here lobbying, to do that as well.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, James Fukuda, I'll let you jump in here, but I think it's just a distraction. He's desperate to keep the government crippled so that they don't come after him. Yeah, I mean, you know, we haven't had the hearings and the investigations in the Congress from Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler and these other committees that we were expecting, because he keeps shutting the government and he says it's about the wall. It's not about the wall. It's about
There's one other bill. There's one other bill that's very important. It's called H.R. 1. I was just in the hearing room for the Judiciary Committee today. H.R. 1 eliminates basically big donors and overturns Citizens United. Changes the gerrymandering laws, voter suppression. I mean, this is the most progressive piece of legislation I've ever seen. I worked on the Judiciary Committee, as you know, for John Conyers for many years, and worked with Bob Petraeus and many of your colleagues. And it's also a distraction from H.R. 1. I don't know if the news media is covering it, but H.R. 1 could change the country. They're talking about publicly financed campaigns and ending voter suppression and gerrymandering. You know, these are the things. This is how far right wing Republicans keep winning in districts that, you know, are predominantly of color, right, or students. And, you know, that's the other reason why he's doing it. So H.R. 1 doesn't get any kind of news coverage, because that's how he got into power and that's how the Republicans stay in power. Let's not forget about H.R. 1, most progressive voting rights bill ever introduced in Congress. Restores the VRA as well.
James Fukuda?
Oh, James is now meeting with a member of Congress. actually on to get a bill to rebuild a bill to rebuild Puerto Rico's 60,000 housing that was destroyed and their agriculture and water systems that the orange-haired guy just threw, as you said, threw paper towels at the people, withdrew the Army Corps of Engineers and FEMA. Now the people don't have food, clean water. They don't have housing. They have these, like, blue tarps. I was just there. It rains, and, you know, it's disgusting, okay? And we're trying to get a bill introduced to rebuild Puerto Rico, get rid of the Jones Act. And I'm determined to do this. I don't care what it takes, but I'm not leaving Washington if that bill gets introduced.
Well, tell us, when were you most recently in Puerto Rico?
I was in Puerto Rico. It's about 4 months ago. I went with actually this wonderful new president of LULAC, Domingo Garcia, and we met with the mayor of Ponce. We met with the governor, and I handed him a clean renewable energy bill that he apparently is supporting. But Duke Energy, which is the headquarters, is in North Carolina, is bidding right now in Puerto Rico to take over the energy grid, which would be frack gas, which would be from our 600-mile underground Atlantic Coast pipeline that's going to go through indigenous lands, which will release methane. That's what I'm fighting right now in North Carolina. But, you know, when I was in the mountains, I couldn't believe what I saw. Trees uprooted, houses destroyed. Everywhere I looked, I saw a blue tarp. But the people themselves, you know, have helped rebuild it. But 1 million people left the country, by the way. 1 million, not 250,000. Over 4,000 killed. And if we do the same energy grid and there's a hurricane and you got above ground electrical wires and frack gas, then more people are going to die again. So we got to solarize and bring clean wind energy to the island. But, you know, I met with the people to, you know, as you draft bills, you got to talk to the people. That's what I was doing. Interviewing the people up in the mountains and in the cities about one was the 100% clean renewable energy bill for Puerto Rico. The other is to rebuild it.
Wow. So what does it feel like now in the Congress with these new people in here and especially the new women?
They've taken over. AOC is, you know, I mean, you know, she's Beyonce and, she's there were cameras at her door. I saw like 200 postings, Happy Valentine's Day, we love you. All these young kids were trying to talk to her. She's a rock star. Obama was sort of that way to a degree. I've never seen anything like this. I was there for almost 14 years. These women are no joke. They're very serious about Medicare for all and jobs for all, and they are challenging, you know, the older white guys and the established kind of order of the Democrats. And they're saying, we want a progressive agenda. And then they're dead serious about it. I just got finished speaking to Pocan's people. And they're serious, man. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I was here 14 years, lobbied for 10. And I wish those women were here when I was here because it was lonely. I was lonely being a progressive staffer with John Congressman.
Yeah, I can dig it. So I'm just looking at the paper now, and it says that Trump is going to declare a national emergency. And this is absolutely, it is absolutely not about the border wall. This is totally, and Joel, you got to spread this word, and everybody's going to know. This is not about the border wall. This is about his being indicted and his not wanting to face these hearings and the Justice Department and all that stuff. You know,
I'm here through tomorrow. I will spread the word. You know, there was no crisis on the southern border. There's been if there is a problem, it's people overstaying their visa. But they've interviewed Republican mayors, right, in the border towns along, you know, Texas, Arizona. They say that the undocumented stabilize their economies. They get along great with them. Crime rate is actually highest among people who are who were born here, not indigenous communities. He just lies and says, well, they're criminals, they're rapists, they're drug dealers. Then he blames everything on the Democrats when the government shuts down. But in Charlotte, North Carolina, we're going to introduce a resolution. I want everybody to listen to this, what I'm about to say. We're introducing resolutions across the state of North Carolina. It's a vote of no confidence on Donald Trump's policies on immigration, climate change, and the environment, and cutting, you know, healthcare. We have to rise up and get heard, and quit being, you know, little wussies, and grow a backbone and pass these resolutions with no confidence in every city council, every county commission, every student government, because what I've noticed is people are not speaking out loud enough. They're whispering. You got to shout. And if the city council and county commission start passing these resolutions of no confidence, we're not saying impeach Orange Hair. We're just saying we don't agree with his policies on immigration, you know, banning Muslims, tear gassing children, you know, putting them in detention camps. But that's something we can all do locally. And if this is done by hundreds of city councils and county commissions, I couldn't get anyone yet to introduce it in Congress. I tried. But we've got to speak out, and we have to teach people what this guy's doing. One thing I'm realizing is a lot of people in cities and towns do not understand what Trump is doing. They don't read papers anymore. People don't read the newspaper. So this is a great way to get press, to speak in front of your city council or county commission that you are against his policies and issue a vote of no confidence. That's what they do in Europe and all around the world. Why can't we do it here, Sluggo?
Well, I think it's a great idea, and I think he should be indicted and removed. I have joined a pool, put in $10, predicting that Donald Trump will be out of office by April 22nd. So that's Earth Day. You know, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. Today is the 14th. Does that make today Valentine's Day, by the way? I guess it is, right?
My mother just sent me a Valentine's Day card. Today, Valentine's Day. I've been lobbying all day long. I have no idea, but I do know one thing, that Diablo Canyon that you're working on is one of the single most important efforts that environmentalists need to work on, because why are we going to continue to have dangerous nuclear power plants on fault lines? By the way, when I was with you in Los Angeles and we had the hurricane Florence in Wilmington, they were shutting it down because it was the floods. It was being flooded with water. But I'm so glad that you're doing your fight with Diablo Canyon to shut down that nuclear power plant. And we got to shut the, you know, great to shut them all down, but we certainly got to shut down the ones that are old and can blow up like Fukushima. We don't need nuclear. Let's use solar and wind. You don't have to worry about storing the waste or them blowing up, you know, in a hurricane or in an earthquake. But no nukes, no nukes, no nukes. Sorry about that.
Well, listen, I hear the feds are coming to get you. You told me you had a meeting you got to go to. Is that right, Joel Siegel?
I do have a meeting with a congressman. This is about rebuilding Puerto Rico's housing. Yes.
All right, brother. I'm not going to hold you. Your work is so great and so important, and I wanted you to keep up.
Thank you so much.
This has been Joel Siegel. Joel, tell people again how to get a hold of you.
Sure. You can call Joel Siegel, Executive Director, North Carolina Climate Solutions Coalition, nccoalition.org, 571-344-1518, or Joel, J-O-E-L, .r.siegel, @gmail.com. I will say I am the original co-author of Medicare for All, HR 676, with John Conyers and 40 doctors. And I also have been here, you know, lobbying on that. And I'm trying to get congressional briefings on 676 and Medicare for All. We have to explain it. We have to explain how it works. You can't just say Medicare for All. You've got to explain how it's going to work, how it's going to be paid for and administered. And I've been talking to the staff that you just can't use a slogan, Medicare for All. You got to show exactly to the public and to the press and to experts and to activists, because it's a simple, simple bill. But, you know, I wrote it, and I don't, you know, I was uninsured most of my life. I owe $150,000 in medical bills. I paid $2,000 this month in copays on the congressional plan. And Before I take my last breath, I'm going to see expand and improve Medicare for all single payer in this country. It's the only system that'll work to provide universal health care coverage and contain costs and no financial barriers. And, you know, the right wing and some of the Democrats are saying it's going to bankrupt us. That's a lie. I don't believe it. Go to Physicians for a National Health Program. Just Google PNHB. You can learn everything you need to know about the bill.
All right, brother. Joel Siegel, you are a rock star. It's just great to have you on the show. Keep up the great work. And we are so supportive of all the great things you're doing, man. So keep it up.
It's great. It's great to be in a band with another rock star named Harvey Wasserman. I might play lead guitar, but you are lead singer, man. God bless. Shalom.
All right, man. You take care. Okay.
See Keith Richards.
So much,
see Keith
Siegel.
Richards. Bye.
Thank you, brother.
All right.
Keep up.
Thank you.
Oh, man. Okay, man. Good luck with your congressman.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Okay, so has Mark Ash or Bob Strickas called in at all? Have we heard from these two guys? We have not. Okay, so hello? Okay, so I am now in California, and I have something to tell you all. I want you to be updated now on what we're doing on the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. We have a major confrontation going on here in California over two reactors that are 9 miles west of San Luis Obispo on the California coast. And they are incredibly dangerous. They are old, they are embrittled, and they are subject to all sorts of accidents, liabilities. God forbid there should be an earthquake. And we would be looking basically here in Southern California and across the country at an apocalyptic situation. So I would like you to go to solartopia.org, email me, and I will put you in touch with what's going on here. We have been writing the governor. The governor has not been responding. I'm going to read you the letter that we sent. Hello? Okay, fine. And Myla Reason is going to join us here from Southern California to talk to us about the situation. But this is something I do not want you to be passive about. We do have a petition at moveon.org. If you Google moveon.org, Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, it'll take you to that position. We have about 800 signatures on it right now, and we're continuing to gather them. We're continuing to build this movement. We have also circulated a letter among Hollywood celebrities, and I'm going to read you the partial list of the people who have signed on, and then I'm going to read you the letter because I need you to sign on as well. Mimi Kennedy, the great actress, she's on the current show Moms, and she was in Midnight in Paris and Dharma and Greg. She has been she's our lead signee. Jane Fonda has signed on. Jane, of course, is the queen of Hollywood, and she made a movie exactly 40 years ago called The China Syndrome, which was about a likely accident at a nuclear power plant in California. And this movie came out in 1979 exactly. It was mind-boggling what happened. It came out exactly as we started to have the Three Mile Island accident in Pennsylvania. And literally all the news guys were going to see so they could figure out what was going on about nuclear power, because they knew nothing about nuclear power. Okay, Myla Reason, you've joined us. How are you doing?
Hey, Harvey. Good to hear from you. I just got off the bus, and I saw your text to call in, so I'm calling in. So.
Okay, good. Well, make yourself comfortable. We have the rest of the half hour here to talk about the rest of the hour to talk about Diablo Canyon. I am reading
Fantastic.
The list of celebrity signers, and then I'm going to read the petition we're sending to Gavin Newsom, and then you can fill us in on more about Diablo Canyon. So we got Mimi Kennedy, Jane Fonda, the great Ed Asner of television fame, Jodie Evans, Code Pink, Dr. Helen Caldicott,
the world famous physician Diana Cohen, who works on the Plastics Pollution Coalition, Graham Nash, the great singer from Crosby, Stills, Nash,
Fancy wow. Fisher,
the great actress who signed, who is was the mother of Kate Winslet in Titanic, and Frances Fisher has made more than 50 movies. Eric Roberts, the great Eric Roberts, who's been in 500 movies, for God's sakes. Lila Garrett, the great talk host here, Eliza Simon, Keaton Simon, Lance Simmons, Susan Clark, many, many more. Barbara Williams, John Densmore, the drummer for The Doors, and so many more have signed on to this amazing letter. And here's the letter. And then because this has, and I can be brief about the letter we've sent to Gavin Newsom. He has been, and we know he got this. I can't tell you exactly how, but we have a back channel to Gavin Newsom. And are we joined by someone else?
Yes.
Someone Michael else has joined us?
Someone named
Michael. Oh, great. Michael Keegan has joined us. Good. So Michael,
great.
Michael Keegan is in Michigan, and so we have a good expert panel here on nuclear power and on Diablo Canyon. So Michael and Myla and our listeners, I'm going to read the seven key points that we have sent in to Governor Gavin Newsom to deal with. Now, one of the reasons that we believe, well, the main reason we believe that the governor has power in this, and Michael, you can comment on this, because there's a similar situation with First Energy in Ohio. Normally, the issues that we're raising about the Diablo Canyon are in the purview of the exclusive purview of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is a completely corrupted non-agency.
Captured.
In D.C.
Captured agency.
Captured. That's what we call it, captured. Michael, do you have a word you can use that's not four-letter to describe the Nuclear Regulatory Commission?
They give the Constitution a bad name.
They give the Constitution a bad name and regulation.
Constitution a bad name.
Yes. So what we've got going on here is usually the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has total power over the seven issues that I'm about to explain here. But because PG&E, as First Energy, is in bankruptcy, and because PG&E is in criminal proceedings and actually has been convicted of federal crimes and actually has a parole officer, we want the governor to deal with these issues and to order them to test Diablo Canyon. The first item that we want to test it for is embrittlement, and I'll let Myla explain that in a minute. The second item we want is cracking, and I'll let Michael explain that one. Then we have deferred maintenance, and deferred maintenance means that PG&E has not been taking care of the plant, and as they did not take care of the pipelines in San Bruno, which blew up in 2010 and killed eight people, and did not take care of the power lines in Northern California, causing apocalyptic fires and killing 80 people and destroying over 10,000 buildings. So deferred maintenance is number three. Number four is a seismic earthquake vulnerability, which was laid out by Michael Peck, who was an NRC inspector at Diablo for 5 years. Number five is radioactive waste, already a catastrophe at San Onofre, and we are convinced, of course, that PG&E can't handle the nuclear waste. Number six is competence. This was raised by U.S. Congressman Salud Carbajal, who represents San Luis Obispo, and he has publicly stated that he doesn't think PG&E can handle operating two nuclear reactors, which we wholeheartedly agree. And finally, number seven is the need for power. This is true also at the nuclear plants owned by First Energy. There's absolutely no need for the power that comes from sporadically from Diablo Canyon. So those
That's
seven
right.
reasons, we are asking the governor of California to step in and prevent Diablo Canyon from refueling, which is scheduled to happen in a matter of days, and hold public hearings on all these issues and make the decision himself, along with the state agencies and the PUC here and the legislature, on whether or not Diablo should, in fact, be refueled and Diablo 1 reopened. So let's jump back to the top here.
Yeah. Yeah, Harvey, if listeners want to weigh in and sign the petition to get in touch with the governor, a good way to do it if they're on Twitter is to look for the hashtag #TestDiablo, and if they do that, they will find links to the petition that they can sign, the move-in petition, asking for these seven things to be taken care of by the governor. So
that's one word, hashtag #TestDiablo.
Hashtag #TestDiablo, yeah. So
can you give us the rundown on embrittlement, and then Michael will
Early on, physicists and nuclear engineers came to understand that one of the greatest vulnerabilities for these nuclear reactors is embrittlement. And it happens over time. It's a result of, it's sort of like metal fatigue. And what happens is that you've got this reactor pressure vessel that where the chain reaction is happening. And every time there's an atom is split, one of the neutrons escapes and collides with the interior of the reactor vessel and causes a microcrack. And this is happening constantly over time. And as these microcracks accumulate, the reactor becomes increasingly embrittled. And what they came to understand at some point was that when they were using copper as an alloy to make the steel for the pressure vessels, that because the copper has this soft quality, it was actually more vulnerable and more likely to have significant fracturing. But Diablo 1, Unit 1, was made with that copper, and back in 2002 or 2005, it was determined to be among the five most embrittled reactors in the country. Now, the embrittlement means that if there's a rapid shutdown, cool down, a rapid change in temperature, then the reactor vessel can shatter like glass. And in that case, there could be a massive release of radiation on the scale of Chernobyl or Fukushima, and we'd all be eating it big time. So, and this could happen. It could happen because of an earthquake, but it could also happen because of some human error, some mishap that makes the controls panel not work, and then all of a sudden you've got a major calamity.
Right. Now, Michael Keegan, you just thank you, Myla Reason. That was really good. Michael Keegan, you just emailed me something about a can you tell me about this Nuclear Regulatory Commission development and what Diablo is asking for?
There's going to be a meeting coming up. I believe it's the 19th. I don't have that document up in front of me. They're looking
it's
to get
28th.
A relaxation.
It's going to be on the 28th.
On the 28th of February, yes. They're looking to get an exemption on doing a visual inspection of the reactor internals. And this is pretty troubling, considering the conversation just had on embrittlement and Diablo Canyon being one of the most embrittled in the nation. So there needs to be the visual inspection, and they need to pull some of these capsules out. These capsules are sample metal of the same vintage, and what they do is they pull them out on supposed to be on a regular schedule, but they've been skipping the schedule. They're supposed to pull them out and do what some call it a Sharpie test, whereby they can judge the embrittlement of the metal, and they refuse to do that. Rather than pulling the samples out, the capsules out. They rely on industry data from other nuclear plants they call their sister plants. And then they compile all this data, and then they deduce that it's not really an issue. We don't need to pull the capsule. The methodology is very shoddy, and they're actually losing information by doing it. You really need to get in there and pull those capsules, do the visual inspection of the reactor internals, and find out what's going on with the embrittlement at that plant. We ran into a similar situation at the Cal State nuclear plant.
Go ahead.
Early on, the industry decided that it would be safe and prudent to test these capsules every 10 years, and they were on a 10-year schedule. And then the industry started pushing back, and they were saying, oh, it's too burdensome, too onerous. We don't need to test them that often. We can just rely on computer modeling and other data. And so the last time Diablo was tested was in 2002. And it was scheduled to be tested again in 2012. But in 2011, PG&E wrote to the NRC, and they asked to defer the pulling the coupon until 2022, and they were given permission to do that. So what we did, we not only have deferred maintenance, but we also have deferred safety testing, and it's really a big problem.
Right, and they're already exceeding the improvement standards. Appel says they exceeded them as early as 1981, and then the NRC rewrote those standards, relaxed them each time. They know the answer. These reactors are embrittled. They just don't want to collect the data that verifies that. This is criminal negligence.
Yes, that's absolutely.
Right.
And as happened in Northern California and San Bruno, and actually last week, PG&E blew up some pipes in San Francisco and burned down 5 buildings. This time it didn't kill anybody, but they are, we believe, and Michael, I hope this pans out, both in California and in Ohio, because First Energy is also in bankruptcy. And so in both cases, they're claiming, of course, that these tests for embrittlement, for cracking, for deferred maintenance, are in the federal purview. But in fact, if they're in bankruptcy, we should have access to some kind of redress in bankruptcy court. And furthermore, PG&E is under criminal parole. They were found guilty in federal court of all sorts of crimes, and they actually have a parole officer. But I hope in Ohio and in Pennsylvania, we'll be successful in going into bankruptcy court on these issues. So, Michael, is there a number, like when they take the coupons out of the core and they subject them to destructive testing, is there a single number that comes out that says how embrittled on a scale of 1 to 10 a reactor might be?
No, they haven't. There's a temperature, it's a complex formula of temperature and pressure, but what they do is they actually break the coupon, they break the piece of metal, and judging by the resistance on how it breaks, they know how embrittled it is. It's called a Charpy test. It amounts to a swinging pendulum that basically cuts the piece of metal in two, and from the resistance, they know how embrittled. So they have a scale. When they first started out, they were not to exceed 200. They rolled it back to over 300. And so it's they're really not relying on that test. They're not doing the actual physical destructive testing. They're extrapolating from other data points at other reactors that may or may not be a sister plant. They're really fudging the data is what they're doing. And the methodology is really very, very poor. Proceeding.
If the state gets its hands on the coupons from the core of Diablo, can we have an independent? Are there companies that do this test? Do they just send the coupons to the company?
Well, they have a lab that does it. I don't think they do a split sample. And then they take about a year or two to report out what the findings were. And by then they put the reactor back together again. Oh, yeah. It's all rigged. It's all rigged not to find anything. The methodology is purposely to run around in circles, go through a spin cycle, and never get the data.
If they take the coupon out and the state forces them to not refuel until the results come back from the testing of the coupon, how long can we expect the testing of the coupon to take?
I don't think it would take that long to test it, frankly. It's designed, their system is designed not to get to an answer. If the state has leverage to do that.
Oh, my God, we're done. Hey, Michael Keegan and Nyla Reason, thank you so much. Thank you to the crew in New York. We're going to continue this. Keep up, you guys. Thank you so much.
Okay.
No news,
thank
everybody.
You.
See you next week.
Okay. Thanks, Harvey.
Bye.
Solotopia, 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 don't you know we're gonna have a Solotopia all over.